On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Harvard political scientist Robert Putnam is a self-described full-on liberal who worries a lot about community in America. He made his name in the 1990s with his finding that hordes of Americans were, in his famous phrase, bowling alone, living without the traditional community ties of bowling leagues and moose clubs that bound people together. Then he set out on a huge project to find out why. The answer looks like a liberal's nightmare: diversity. Diverse communities, Putnam found, show dysfunction, at least for a while. Up next on Point, Robert Putnam, Pat Buchanan, and Lonnie Guinier on diversity and community in America. Joining me now from Concord, New Hampshire, is Robert Putnam, professor of public policy at Harvard University. In June, he released a provocative study, the result of a huge long-term survey of Americans that found diverse communities less trusting, more unhappy places where people check out of community and retreat to their televisions. Robert Putnam, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks very much, Tom. It's good to be here.
Talk about hitting a hornet's nest. We hope that that you've got this right. I mean, how do you determine something like that in the first place?
Tom, can I just take a minute to give the larger version of my argument, because you've
Let's
gotten
hear it.
Part of it, and I know that you know the larger version. I think that diversity and immigration have great benefits for America. I think they also have short-run adjustment costs. That is, in the short run, people are not comfortable around people unlike themselves, and therefore that's the part of my study that you summarized. But on the other hand, there are great advantages to diversity, and immigration has surely been an important element in American success. And the last part of my article and of my argument, but it sometimes has gotten overlooked in the controversy about that point that you made, is that over the long run, successful immigration societies master the problem of adjustment to diversity. And I'm pretty hopeful and confident that we will too. So my point is not to oppose diversity and certainly not to oppose immigration, but to call attention to one of the downsides, one of the short-run problems that's associated with immigration and diversity, so that we can focus on how to correct that part of the problem.
Point taken, and you do lay all that out. It's clear that you are not anti-diversity. You're quite in favor of it. But you, above all, Robert Putnam, are also tightly associated with the importance of community. And if
right.
there's something going on that is undercutting community in a democracy, that's pretty important. I mean, in the long run, you say maybe it'll work out. In the long run, we'll all be dead. People see, you know,
democracy. No. I don't agree with that. It's not like in the long run, we'll all be dead. I think there are specific things that American society has done in the past to adjust to previous waves of immigration, and we need to be about the business of doing those things again now.
Okay. Before we look at that, your prescription for how to address this, let's be sure we understand the reality that you're describing.
Sure.
Here. And this isn't a tiny reality. This is from a survey right across this country in enormous cities and little villages. I mean, Los Angeles, it's not exactly a passing thing. It's a giant metropolis. When you've gone into these more diverse communities, first of all, how did you do it, and what did you find in the survey?
In the year 2000, we conducted a very large number of surveys all across America, 30,000 interviews,
That's
as you
huge.
Say, in places like Los Angeles and Boston and Atlanta and Detroit and Chicago and so on, lots of places you've heard of, and then lots of places that most people haven't heard of, a little Appalachian village in the Appalachian hills of West Virginia, and a very rural, desolate county in South Dakota.
So you were comparing very diverse places and quite homogeneous places.
That's correct.
In part.
And not only just big, diverse, and small, diverse, not only just big, diverse, mm-hmm. and small, homogeneous, but also some places that are small and diverse and places that are relatively large and relatively relatively homogeneous. So we're looking at the map of America and how diverse America is. And what we found was that the more diverse the census tract you live in short, the more diverse your neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
controlling for a lot of other things that affect your...
We'll talk
your,
about that, yep.
The more likely you are to distrust people who don't look like you, That is, whites distrust blacks and mm-hmm. Asians distrust Latinos and so on, but also to distrust people who do look like you. The more diverse your neighborhood, the less whites trust whites. Blacks trust blacks less. Asians trust Asians less. Latinos trust Latinos less.
Less trust,
everybody
period.
Trusts their neighbors.
Yeah.
Less in a more diverse setting. People trust local government less. They're less likely to cooperate in community addressing community problems. They have fewer friends. They report they're less happy and less satisfied with their lives. And they're less connected with their neighbors and less likely to work on community projects. The only two things that we can find that go up as the diversity of your neighborhood goes up are protest marches and television watching.
So you got anger and couch potatoes.
That's right. But not anger that gets put
productively
forward in,
channeled, right?
And not, I mean, there's nothing wrong with protest marches. Of course, There's nothing wrong with protest marches. But, and you know, if I lived in one of these neighborhoods, I might actually join a protest march.
But there's less voter registration, as you described.
Yeah,
less
and
political
people are,
participation.
And people trust themselves politically less. That is, they say they're less likely to be influential politically. So it's not that these are people who are confidently protesting to change things. These are people who are grumpy. As I say in the article that you're quoting, the short version of this is that in the context of diversity, it appears most Americans hunker down, pull in like a turtle.
This sounds like
that's the short run effect.
Well, how do you know it's short term? How do you know that?
Well, because we can see in American history, for example, mm-hmm. that over the course of the 20th century, basically, at the beginning of the 20th century, we had another one of these periods of great increase in diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We had what people at the time called the arrival of many different races. Different races in that case meant Italians from southern Italy and Jews from Russia and Poles and Czechs and Irish
people
and
the northern migration
so
of African Americans and
absolutely.
And all the rest.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, too, people were discombobulated. That's a technical term.
Yes.
People
really
were a little made uneasy by the fact there were all these strange people coming into, quote, our country. And you know, we have, because we successfully surmounted that challenge as a country, not entirely. I'll come back later. I hope we can have a chance to come back later to the special case of African Americans. But in general, we successfully surmounted that challenge, and so successfully that we actually now have kind of got a national amnesia and don't remember how much work it was and how much success we had.
Bob Putman, we'll talk about that, but how about the way your research is being received right now? I mean, I'm looking at websites that are taking your research, Harvard research, as sort of the new gospel, saying that you have exposed the mythology of multiculturalism. A big piece in the Boston Globe quotes you saying, "It certainly is not pleasant when David Duke's website hails me as the guy who found out racism is good." You know, what are you stoking here? What are we learning? Won't a lot of people look at your research and say, that's what we told you?
Yeah, this is. I'm trying to make two points here. I think they're both important for the future of America, but people will hear one or the other of these points, and I'm hoping that people will hear them both. The first point is, it's not easy to get familiar and comfortable with diversity. And I think that's the point that probably is uncomfortable to many of my liberal friends and colleagues and allies.
So that's hardly a secret.
Well, but it's something that's a little
harder than
popular
in
some segments of American society to say. On the other hand, I also want to say, but look, if we work at it, this is a soluble problem. We have to think about how to create a more encompassing sense of we.
Mm.
And that part of my argument is very uncomfortable and uncongenial to conservatives. And
we got Robert Putnam standby. I want to invite into our conversation with me in the studio, in fact, Lonnie Guinier, professor of law at Harvard Law School, around the block from you there. First came to public attention in 1993 when President Clinton nominated her to be the first black woman to head the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. That didn't happen, but she has been a champion of civil rights for a long time. Lonnie Guinier, welcome.
Thank you.
Bob Putnam, Robert Putnam, has laid some pretty volatile stuff on the table here. Does it just strike you as correct that more diverse communities are more unhappy, isolated, less trusting communities?
Well, I don't want to endorse the idea that more diverse communities are necessarily more isolated and less trusting. I do find his research intriguing, and in particular his metaphor of the turtle. And I want to propose that the turtle needs to meet the canary.
The turtle withdrawing, shrinking into its shell here,
right.
He says, yes.
Hunkering down.
Mm-hmm.
And the canary is the signal species that was used by the miners to alert them when the atmosphere there was toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense is that his study is really telling us about a toxic atmosphere that's lurking in the background, in the shadows of American democracy more generally. And although he's finding it in acute ways in more diverse communities, he's also, I think, tapping into a sense of alienation and a sense of anomie, a sense of fear that is taking over this country more generally. So it may hit diverse communities first because they're more vulnerable like the canary, but the atmosphere in the mines is getting more like what he's finding in diverse communities, and we really need to address that.
Robert Putnam joins us. He's a professor of public policy at Harvard University, wrote Bowling Alone, and now he's out with this big one. Lonnie Guinier is with us, professor of law at Harvard Law School. Right now from McLean, Virginia, we're joined as well by Pat Buchanan, leading conservative voice in the American conversation, three-time presidential candidate, author most recently of State of Emergency, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America. Knows how to write a volatile book title. Pat Buchanan, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom, and let me correct your earlier introduction.
Please.
I'm not anti-immigration. I'm the descendant of German, Irish, and Scotch-Irish immigrants who I think have added greatly to the country. I think immigration is good, but I think Dr. Putnam's point is exceedingly well taken. We had enormous numbers of immigrants come in between 1890 and 1920, and then we had about a 40-year timeout on immigration, which enabled us to assimilate these folks into society. I went to one of those parochial schools in the 40s and 50s, where a lot of them were Catholic immigrants, and those institutions assimilated us, and basically the times and the time out. After about two generations or a generation and a half, this was a very united country. 97% of us spoke English. In a lot of ways, with the exception, as Dr. Putnam mentioned, of the African American community, it was a far stronger society because the diversity. Folks had melded and had become Americans. They were no longer simply Irish or German or Scotch-Irish. We were of one new, different, separate, unique nationality.
So, Pat Buchanan, you say you're not anti-immigration, but maybe anti-immigration right now. Put the brakes on, stop it, let it all settle down.
I think I would agree that we need what John F. Kennedy called for in 1958, which is legal immigration should be cut back, I think, fairly dramatically to 150,000, 250,000 a year. Illegal immigration halted cold, security fence on the border, because what is taking place in the Southwest now, as Dr. Huntington has written about, a colleague of Dr. Putnam, is really an invasion. When the President of the United States says he stopped 6 million at the border in his first 5 years, and the numbers coming from other than Mexico have tripled, we've got an invasion on our hands.
Pat Buchanan, let me ask Robert Putnam about his data and your prescription.
Sure.
Robert Putnam, you see how Pat Buchanan picks up the data that you found and what he makes of it. You know, let's close the door for a while.
Well, I appreciate Pat's recognition of the contributions that immigrants have made. This is not just rhetoric. There's hard evidence, and I refer to some of it in my paper, that places that are more diverse are also more creative. A vastly disproportionate fraction of Americans, Nobel Prize winners and our best scientists and our best artists and so on, are immigrants. And that kind of vital contribution that those people make and that Pat's ancestors made when they came here, I don't think we should cut off. I mean, in fact, for my sins, my ancestors came to this country in 1640, and they were no doubt kind of upset at all these Scotch-Irish folks and Irish people and the Germans that Pat's ancestors, arriving a couple hundred years later, brought. And no doubt my ancestors were really grumpy.
But you are pointing to a problem and saying it's going to take some addressing, it's going to take some work. And
but
Fred Buchanan says, yes, but in that case, we've got to slow this whole thing down or we're not going to get on top of it.
What Pat says is this. Look,
Dr.
Putnam is right in this sense. People do not realize and recognize that when the Irish got here, there were terrible problems. Take a look at the movie with Scorsese's Gangs of New York.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Take a look at Crash in Los Angeles now. These are realistic portrayals of grave problems. Given time, given goodwill, given the melting pot, the problems can be overcome. But the numbers now that concern so many Americans are enormous. You had about a couple of million Hispanics in the country in the 1950s, and now it's anticipated by 2050 there will be 100 million. Heavily concentrated in the Southwest, when 58% of Mexicans believe that belongs to them. So there's a lot of problems attendant to the new immigration. I agree with Dr. Putnam. He's probably a little more optimistic than I am that they can be solved, but I don't believe they can be solved if we don't recognize that there are problems, that diversity brings with it problems, and it takes a while to create a real national community, and we need time.
I want to turn to Lonnie Guinier, if I may. Madame Guinier, so you're listening to, a couple of white guys talking about this. What's your perspective? Are you prepared to see diversity in itself, in its volume, in itself, as a problem?
I don't think that that's the message, or I hope that's not the message of Robert Putnam's work.
He's got a list of bullet items as long as your arm here of problems attendant to it, the hunkering down, the withdrawal, the isolation, the unhappiness, the lack of political involvement.
Right. And these are problems that I would argue are endemic to the United States. It may be that in comparing diverse communities to homogeneous communities, you will find more social capital in the homogeneous communities than in the diverse communities. That's the idea that segregation breeds congregation.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that those homogeneous communities are happy with the unequal distribution of wealth in this country, with the fact that we are not investing in our public infrastructure. I mean, there are problems in this country, and I don't think we can associate those problems with diversity. I think what Bob Putnam is telling us is that we need to attend to the challenges of diversity in order to realize its benefits, but that doesn't mean that diversity itself is the problem.
Robert Putnam, what about Lonnie Guinier's interpretation? It's not a turtle that's the real issue here. It's a canary. We've got a general problem in the society, people not engaged enough, a sense of enemy. Are you buying that interpretation, or is she ducking your data?
Well, no. I mean, I do agree with Lanny that there's more wrong with America at the moment, and there's more social alienation than is attributable just to diversity. I agree with that. And I agree that we've got to address all of those issues, including especially the issue of growing inequality, which is not just about race, but it's about class. So I agree with that. I do think that the diversity actually complicates dealing with those problems because it tends to fragment groups that otherwise would share an interest in trying to solve some of the larger problems. And I do think that even progressives like Lanny and me have to worry about the degree to which this unfamiliar, uncomfortable diversity is fracturing and fragmenting groups that really ought to be more collaborating. I mean, you can just see this in the politics of any large city now. The conflicts between Latinos, for example, and blacks. That's a very, as Lenny knows very well, it's a very common pattern. Even though they're both, would in many respects share fundamental interests. So, I think what we really need to do is to focus on how do we, and I'm speaking now both to Lanny and to Pat, what we need to focus on is how we create a wider sense of we. What, in fact, do we need to do in order to generate that process of assimilation that we went through in the 20th century with respect to other
folks? So that diversity becomes a kind of unity or is perceived that way. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us. Pat, I'll come right to you, but let me get the voice of the people in here for a second. Lisa Maria is calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Lisa Maria, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to ask the researcher about the exceptions to his rule. I live in Jamaica Plain, which in Boston he might be familiar with, is a notable exception to his rules of hunkering down.
Very diverse community and a pretty engaged community.
Very engaged community. And so I want to ask him if he did study the exceptions, number one, and number two, what makes those exceptions different? What is working there and what can be done to help it work in other diverse communities?
Let us hold that thought, Lisa Maria. Thanks very much. And get one more call from Nashville. Lafayette is on the line. Lafayette, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I was just calling. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and I recall, you know, that there was just pretty much two ethnic groups, blacks and whites, mm-hmm. here, say, past 15 years ago, and all of a sudden, you know, I read the USA Today newspaper that the Hispanics are moving eastward, and, you know, I wonder if your guest could elaborate on that.
Well, let me ask you, Lafayette, your perspective on that. As an African-American, do you have a problem with that? Is that too much diversity for your taste, or are we headed for the promised land here?
I don't know. I think we're actually turning into a third world nation, considering threats from China just yesterday with selling our bonds.
Dropping the debt. Lafayette, we've got it. Robert Putnam, there's a couple of interesting calls. Let me come first to you on Lisa Maria's question. You found a big trend, big study. Are there exceptions? Does she live in one?
Yes, to both those questions. I know Jamaica Plain a little bit, and I agree with Lisa Maria's account of Jamaica Plain. It's a diverse and a remarkably vibrant community, and I agree completely with her idea that we need to learn from the exceptions. There are exceptions around the country to the general rule, and you can see it in my own data. You can see places that are not as hunkered as you'd think they might be, given how diverse they are. And you can see places that are more hunkered than they should be, given how homogeneous they are. So I'm not trying to say there's a single rule here that hunkering is just constantly high associated with diversity. But those are exceptions, and we need to learn from them. But we can't, in celebrating those exceptions, we can't ignore the fact that for many Americans, living in a diverse community is not the kind of delicious experience that Lisa Maria is describing for Jamaica Plain. And I was only going to say that I thought Lafayette actually expressed quite reasonably the way in which changes in levels of diversity are unsettling to all of us, actually. This is not a matter of race. Whites, blacks, Asians, Latinos, everybody is a little unsettled when there are people around that you don't quite know how they, you know, what they mean or what their intentions are or how they behave or even what their moves mean. If they look directly at you, does that mean, hi, I'm glad to meet you, or does it mean you better watch your back?
Yeah. Pat, I'm going to give you the mic in just a second, but I want to get Lani Guinier to respond to Lafayette in Nashville. You know, middle-aged black gentleman says, my own community's changed with Latinos in a way, a diversity that clearly is unsettling for him. He sees his country becoming a third-world country. What do you say to Lafayette?
Well, I think he's expressing a lot of the discomfort that I was describing, that people feel that there is vast inequality in this country and they're not sure what the source is. So
That's not what he said. He said we were black and white and now we have Latinos moving.
And we're becoming a third world nation.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And so he's suggesting that the conditions of his life are deteriorating, and he's not sure why. Mm-hmm. And so one of the easy answers is, well, there are more Latinos here now than there were before. And I think that part of the challenge is for us to begin to develop a vocabulary for talking about race, for talking about diversity, that explains the unfamiliarity and the unsettling aspects mm-hmm. that Bob Putnam is addressing, mm-hmm. but that doesn't attempt to identify all of those problems as a function of diversity. So we have to, in my view, abandon what the Supreme Court is telling us in its recent cases, that we can't talk about race because mm-hmm. if we talk about it, that somehow makes it more salient. Mm-hmm. We have to acknowledge its salience, but then deal with it so that people aren't running away from it, but they're engaging with it and the problems that it represents.
Pat Buchanan, how about that? Maybe, so we've got some problems here. Robert Putnam lays them out. But maybe fundamentally this is a kind of red herring. Maybe we've got deeper problems when it comes to political participation than just the color of our skin or our ethnic backgrounds, Lonnie Guinier says.
Well, look, we do have other problems, but look, this is not ideology. This is about race and ethnicity. That African-American fellow from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee is like a lot of African-Americans who spoke to me about my book. You're dead on, Pat. Tell it like it is. One of them caught me up in the parking lot and said, we don't need a fence on the border, Mr. Buchanan. We need a wall. Now, are you still there?
Yes, we are.
Okay, because the line just cleared up. Excellent.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, what's going on is this. People, Americans, sense they're losing the country they grew up in. They're losing their nation. Dr. Putnam's research and study over 5 years confirms what you find by anecdotal evidence everywhere. I grew up in Washington, D.C., went to the Catholic schools there, as I mentioned. Mm. Desegregation decision came down. The whites fled the city completely. There were 96%, 98% of the school population was African American. Right now, you see white folks are leaving California in great numbers. They are uncomfortable where they are. These are strangers coming in. We've got to get to the point, Tom, ask yourself, what is a nation? Is it simply an ideological entity, an ideological creation, or is it about blood and soil and history and language and culture and tradition?
But my family were strangers here, and so were yours, Pat. And now they're part of the blood and soil and culture of this country, and so are yours, and so are millions of others.
But the point here is assimilation today is not taking place as it did, and there's a reason for it, for example, in the American Southwest. You have enormous numbers. Enormous numbers are illegal. They're coming here not to become American citizens, but to work and take jobs. 72% of all Mexicans believe Americans are essentially racist. You've got divisions in the community. What is needed is time. What is needed is for the melting pot to be repaired.
Pat Buchanan, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom.
Robert Putnam.
Well, I'm frustrated, of course, because there's a lot that Pat has said that I would want to comment on. I want to say just two things. One is I don't think I suppose the most important point that I would disagree about is that all that's required is time. I agree that time is relevant here, but it wasn't just – the last time we went through this, it wasn't just time that solved the problem. Let me give some examples, practical examples of places in America today in which people are overcoming this. And I'm not just thinking about Jamaica Plain. I'm going to use three examples that ideologically Pat ought to find congenial. Three success stories in terms of racial and ethnic integration in America.
Give us one or two quick. We've got 30 seconds before the break.
One is the U.S. Army. One is the Catholic Church. And the third are these large evangelical megachurches. All of those are quite interracial at the moment. And it's because there's a broader sense of identity, some cross-cutting sense of identity, religious or military, which trumps for a moment those ethnic identities.
Let's go to Porter calling from Ipswich, Massachusetts. Porter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a psychologist, and I did my doctoral research in Lawrence, Mass., which is a pretty well-known immigrant city.
Yes, indeed.
In Lawrence. And I came across a book called Huddle Fever.
Huddle, as in football huddle.
As in huddle up.
Okay.
When I hear hunker down, I thought of that.
Okay.
It was, I think on some level, archetypally, there's this problem between moving, feeling the need to move out, as opposed to move over and make room.
You're talking about for the old inhabitants, when new folks show up, Latinos, Cambodians,
correct,
in Lawrence case, whoever it may be.
Correct. And it seems to me that at the institutional level, there's a lot of difficulty there in transition.
But Robert Putnam's finding that even people within race, including whites, have less social glue, at least at the beginning, when their community becomes more diverse. What do you think, Porter?
Well, I think it really is a deep psychological issue. I think it's probably the world over, the species over. There's something about territory. There's something about change in the way of life. Some people are more adaptable than others, I think.
Yep.
Some institutions are more adaptable than others.
Robert Putnam?
Well, first of all, thanks, Parker, for that insight about Lawrence. The only point I'd want to perhaps slightly disagree about is the notion that this is somehow genetic, or that you know, these are, these differences among different ethnic groups are permanent, and we can't do anything about them. Let me just do a quick anecdote here. My wife and I have two close friends live in the Boston area. She's of Irish ancestry. Her parents came from Ireland. He's from of Italian background. They're both Catholic, of course. When they got married in the middle 1960s, it was called by everybody involved a mixed marriage. Mm-hmm. Mixed because it was an Irish person marrying an Italian person, mm-hmm. even though they were both Catholics. I mean, now that seems like a joke. They're, one of their kids
it's just
is
a
married
marriage
to a Protestant.
Mm-hmm.
One of their kids is married to a Protestant. One's married to a Jew. So the notion that their parents, both Catholic, were in a mixed marriage captures the fact that the distinction between being Irish and being Italian has been much reduced just in our lifetime. It's not that Betty doesn't know that she's Irish in background or Roger doesn't know that he's Italian by background. They both do, but it doesn't have that same salience that it did. So if we'd been talking about these distinctions, you know, 50 or 100 years ago, we would have said, well, you know, Irish, Italian, different, you know, water and oil and vinegar don't mix. But in fact, they do mix. This is a movable feast.
So what? Some years hence, and you put a number on it. Are we talking 10 or 50 or 100? What we see as distinctions now will no longer be distinctions. Is that a dream or
no? Well, first of all, it's not a dream. I gave you some examples of places that it's happening in America now. And moreover, the whole point of my making talking about raising this issue is I think it depends on, if we act on this and act both in our private lives and in public policy to try to create this more encompassing sense of we. This transition can be relatively short. If we just sort of you know, sit back and allow time to work the way Pat Buchanan was arguing, I think it'll take a much longer time. We're going to be more diverse. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. We are going to be a more diverse place. Partly that's because of immigration and partly it's because of differential birth rates. The question is, what do we do about it? How do we reweave the fabric of our communities? That's the question.
Mm. Let's go to James in Orlando, Florida. James, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had a couple of quick points. Number one, I grew up in the Orlando area and went to school in the Orlando area. And
okay.
We have a large Puerto Rican population that's part of the United States. My English teacher happened to be a Hispanic from Puerto Rico and taught English and Spanish. And I'm also a truck driver, and going into the Miami area, a lot of times there's a communication gap because of the fact that they do not speak English. And that's the biggest thing that I see pulling apart America today and also our communities is that we do not have the assimilation, like they were saying earlier, into the culture and into the language, especially in areas where they're supposed to be American, but they want to hold on. I understand about holding on to your culture.
Sure. James, let me ask you then, how do you see it with time? Robert Putnam suggests with time that will happen. It's happened before in American history, on a grand scale, and it will happen again. Are you confident?
But we're talking, like you just said, how many years? If we don't do something now and stand up and say either we're going to be a Spanish-speaking country or an English-speaking country, we're going back to basically, I hate to use this as an analogy, but a split house like they were during the Civil War. And we all know what Lincoln said.
Yes, yes, we do. James, thank very much for that. Thanks. Thank you. Lonnie Guineer, okay, you say we've got a bigger problem. James is driving his truck, calls in and says maybe so, but it's certainly aggravated. At least, you know, here's an American just speaking to us. Language issues make it harder for things to pull together. You know, he talks about Puerto Rico right there. So how much can we pull ethnicity and culture and language away from what you see as a core political problem?
I think we're focusing on the visible signs of the deterioration of the American fabric. So I disagree with Bob Putnam mm-hmm. in the sense that we simply need to reweave the fabric or that we simply need a broader sense of identity that trumps the differences among us. I agree with him that we need to move beyond these differences to understand a broader sense of mission. And that mission is not merely an identity. It's not simply we all need to speak English. Maybe we all need to speak Spanish and English. Maybe we all need to speak multiple languages if we want to deal in a more global community. But The diversity becomes a visible sign that we focus on, and we become distracted from the source of the problems. If you look at Bob Putnam's original research in Bowling Alone, mm-hmm. he wasn't saying this is a problem simply of diverse communities. He may say that it's exacerbated in diverse communities, but mm-hmm. his original research is that Americans generally are withdrawing from civic life. And this is a problem that is what we should be focusing on in terms of the challenges for the 21st century. How do we reinvigorate our democracy? You asked earlier, how do we protect democracy from or how do we protect democracy as we absorb diversity?
Mm-hmm.
It's not democracy that needs to be protected, because our democracy is being eviscerated from inside. So our democracy needs to be enlivened, not protected. And bringing in diverse communities can help enliven it, as long as we all are committed to this broader mission of challenging inequality, challenging the distribution of wealth, challenging the fact that there are some communities in Appalachia and rural mm-hmm. America, as well as urban America, that are suffering from intergenerational poverty. So when Lafayette calls and says, he's in Nashville, Tennessee, and
yep.
he sees that it's becoming a third world country. Well, part of what may be alarming him is that there are people who are unfamiliar to him moving in. But part of what's alarming him is that his forefathers and ancestors have been in this country, and black people are still not doing well. So this isn't something that the immigrants brought. This is something that we have to focus on more generally.
Robert Putnam, a couple of things there. One, are you following the wrong bouncing ball here when you look at diversity, race, ethnicity, and so on? Lonnie Guinier says maybe that's not the issue. Maybe it's more fundamental. And two, once you've addressed that, you spoke earlier about an African-American exception or distinction within this picture I wish you'd elaborate on. But what about first? Maybe you're just on the wrong beam here. She said.
Tom, first of all, can I make one
Please, yeah.
Pause for a second over this issue of language that was raised mm-hmm. by James, and I didn't have a chance to speak.
Yes.
Three brief points. One is, this is not an unfamiliar kind of debate. 100 years ago, the debate in places like Cincinnati and St. Louis and Milwaukee and so on was, are we all going to become German-speaking? Because most people in those cities at the turn of the century, turn of the last century, around 1900, mm-hmm. were German-speaking. And all the English speakers thought they were being taken over. And in fact, it didn't work that way, because everybody learned English. They had to live in this country. And that same thing is exactly the same thing is happening with respect to Spanish. Pat said that Spanish assimilation of Latino immigrants in the United States was just on a different course. And that's just not true. The rate of language acquisition among Latinos is just about the same as the rate, in fact, is the same as the historical rate of language acquisition among other immigrant groups. It is true that most immigrants want to learn English. And now to talk about the more positive side of this, James is right that we need to do something about helping people learn English. It's not forcing them to speak English. Many of them would like to, and we're not investing enough as a country in English language training. That's the right way to approach the problem. Now, this language issue is an important one. I do think that everybody's got to learn to speak English, but I think that the problem is not to kind of beat up on the Latinos or the immigrants for not learning English. It's for us to help them learn this new language.
Okay, now grand scale. You're looking at diversity. Lonnie Guinier is looking at fundamental political involvement, which she sees as, you know, apart from that, or maybe deeper issue than that, and therefore sort of describing your focus as a red herring.
In fact, what she was saying was that the focus of my previous work was the right. Right was
right.
Not the red herring. It was Bowling Alone that she thought
you were
was
right before you were wrong.
Right. Look, you're not going to get me to say that all's right with America except for diversity. Lanny knows perfectly well I think that there are serious problems with American society. American democracy needs to be reinvigorated. We need to address questions of inequality and so on. All of that I agree about. But I also think that the issue of diversity has got to be recognized by progressives who want to get on and deal with those other issues of inequality. If we close our eyes to the fact that many Americans don't feel comfortable with the current patterns of diversity in America, we won't be able, in fact, to put together a political project that will address the questions that Lonnie and I both want to get on to address.
All right, then, and we'll come to the African-American question, but let me put one of my own in here then. If you and Lonnie both see problems with the way democracy is being practiced and exercised in this country, now your study, and it's a huge study, find statistics that say diversity is throwing a sort of a dystopic element in here all on its own. I mean, this is happening in time. Now, does a democracy have forever to fix these things up? And if we've got a democracy that some people even say is in crisis, and diversity is slowing its capacity or retarding its capacity for healing, for self-correction, then do we have a deeper crisis, Robert Putnam?
Well, we've got multiple crises here. Tom, the fact of diversity is not going to go away. All we want to about walls and fences and so on. The fact of diversity is not going to go away. So you can't just deal with this issue that I'm talking about, that I'm now talking about, that is the issue of diversity, by just ignoring it. Look, let me give one quick historical analogy. Because all major social changes bring with them problems in the short run that need to be addressed, even when the changes themselves are basically good, as immigration is basically helpful for America. The Industrial Revolution, the short-run effect of the Industrial Revolution in the cities of England in the 19th century was to raise the mortality rate. People died about 10 years younger on average after the onset of the Industrial Revolution than before. Now, when the first people noticed that, of course, some people said, well, wait a minute, if we're all dying so much, why do we want this Industrial Revolution? Everybody back to the villages, please. But that's not what happened. People recognized that on balance, the Industrial Revolution was bringing greater welfare to the society, but they did have this downside, the public health, and therefore people investigated, well, what's the specifics about this particular downside, that is the public health? And they found the solutions by, clean water and better sewage systems and so on. So to have the debate about should we have the Industrial Revolution or not would have been crazy. We were going to have the Industrial Revolution. Rather, the point was, how do we address this short-run downside but serious problem?
What do we do with it? In some sense, your study, it's almost like, as you say, we have diversity. It's a fact, and we celebrate it by and large. But here comes your study. It's almost like yelling fire in a crowded theater. We've got diversity. We've got to deal with it. And you're telling us, it makes us dysfunctional.
Well, would you have said, Tom, that it was wrong for the people who discovered the mortality rates in Manchester and Birmingham and so on? Should they have not talked about
No, I would not. Well, maybe on the other hand, then, maybe what you're saying is obvious, that, of course, when you get people together, it takes time for them to get to know each other and flow together. I mean, is this like announcing you can drown in water?
Could I say something?
Please.
I think that Bob is right, that we have to focus on the challenges of diversity. But what I might suggest as an alternative is not to look backwards, but to look forward. So that the model for today's challenges is not the Irish-Italian mixed marriage of two Catholics, which happened at a time of great prosperity in the United States following World War II, where there was an increasing commitment to equality and
sense of comfort, security,
and public investment in public resources. Mm-hmm. And what I think may be happening in diverse communities is that people are feeling that the public sphere is no longer open to them, and they blame it on diversity, or they associate it with diversity. But in fact, there are other things that are happening simultaneously that are withdrawing our capital investment, our commitment to the public. So, for example, in higher education in the 1950s, when the Irish and the Italian Catholic marriage was a mixed marriage, we were investing in public education, and the government, the federal government, the state government, was paying for people to go to college. City College in New York City in the 1960s cost $16, and that was for a student activity fee. Now we've changed, and we said going to college is the student's burden.
You're on your own.
That's right. The government is not going to pay for you. It may lend you money, but you're going to owe it back.
We've just got a minute left. Robert Putnam, is government intervention going to fix the problem you describe?
It's not going to fix it. That's much too simple. But government action is an important part of the array of ways in which we deal with this. It's got to be. This is a problem that's going to take us the next 15, 20 years if we work at it. Take it longer if we don't work at it. Government is an important part of the solution to that, including some of the programs that Lanny's talking about. But it also requires us connecting with people that at the moment seem different from us. But if you connect with them over a longer run, they're not all that different.
And what to you is the meaning of Pat Buchanan taking your study and running to bar the door?
You can't control how people use the research you do. You try to make clear what you think the implications are, which is what I've been doing, and then you hope that the process of debate and deliberation of democracy will come to the right answer.
I hope we're part of that right here. Robert Putnam at Harvard University and Lonnie Guinier, thanks to each of you. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks a lot.
And Lonnie, great to see you again.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.